The House State Affairs Committee will come to order at 10 minutes after 8, and this is what? This is March 3rd. With us on my left is Representative Greenberg, on the right, Representative Gatto, and Vice Chair Seaton. And excused today are Representative Johnson, Representative Wilson, Representative Peterson. Today on the calendar, we have HB 116 regarding Iditarod registration plates and SJR 5, Alaska Territorial Guard retirement benefits. And I would request that the person representing HB 116 to come forward. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is James Ellis. I am staff for Representative Newman, and I will be presenting today.
Okay, tell us about it and why we should consider this, and et cetera.
Okay. Well, as you, I'm sure, all know, the Iditarod is a fairly well-known factor of Alaskan life, known throughout the rest of the country. You know, the participants show great courage, dedication, hard work, and basically the intent of this bill is to provide a chance for there to have special license plates for those who have finished the race as a show of pride and congratulations to them, and you know, for the state as a whole. This bill, only people who have actually raced and finished the race would be eligible to get these license plates. They'll provide proof, and the DMV will verify that with the Iditarod Race Committee, or the official record keepers. The DMV will, under this, will be authorized to design and issue these license plates. There'll be a charge for them, as there are for other license plates. This would be $50. That money goes back into the general fund. The vehicle that, you know, there are many participants from around the nation. That vehicle that they get the plates for must be registered within the state. Of course, they could drive it outside, but they must have an actual vehicle here. There's over 600 people who have finished the race so far. Very shortly here, we'll be running again, and we'll get a new batch.
Anticipated my question.
Well,
Reverend Gatto.
Oh, multiple finishers, though. I mean, 600 individuals or 600 total?
My understanding, 600 individuals.
Really?
I'm probably not going to qualify for one of these. Representative Greenberg.
A few questions. Sounds like a good idea, first of all. But what do you mean on this? What does the sentence mean through the chair, Mr. Ellis, on lines 8 through 10? It can't be a duplication of an existing registration. What does that mean?
I had this explained to me through the chair, and
or should I ask Ms. Brewster or somebody else? I'll ask her.
She'd probably be able to explain that.
Okay. Number two, if the person's from Norway or Nebraska or wherever else, will that give them the right to have that on their car wherever they live, or is it just, in other words, is this saying, let's say the Nebraska tax is $200 or something, will this allow them to register it here where it's only $118, or how is that going to work?
I cannot speak to the exact nature of that. I believe that's partly governed by that individual's home state. From personal experience, I know my parents keep vehicles registered in another state, and if they're within that state for a certain period of time, then the registration must be changed to that state. I believe each state governs that individually.
I'll have to ask her.
Yeah, that's Ms. Brewster.
That also.
Yeah.
And I have one more question,
all
too.
Right.
We've seen special license plate legislation on not zillions of occasions, but a lot of occasions. And the problem with the bills is that they become Christmas trees. And is it your intent not to allow this to become a Christmas tree? Because, you know, this is a good bill, but I'd hate to see it circumvent the committee process and have the people who win the termite eating contest have a special license plate. And
may I respond a little bit? This is only for this license plate. We have another bill coming in the future, one of my bills, license plate for honorary consuls. But we didn't try to add any other place to this because, as I understand it, hopefully, if we can get this through the House and the other body and get it signed in time for the completion of the Iditarod, the idea is to make some of these available in Nome at the end of the Iditarod. Am I correct?
That is correct, Chair.
So we didn't want to burden it with other issues.
So you're not going to let it be? That's great. I'd like that. You have to say yes.
No, yes. Yes, to the Chair. That is our intent, to not allow it to become a Christmas
tree.
Thank you.
So we have your assurance on that. Thank you.
Well, of course, he can't really stop any committee from doing
it. No, but that's the sponsor's intent.
Reverend Gatto.
Thanks. I just look for trouble whenever I see a bill. And it says successfully finish the race. And I'm going to just assume somebody starts in Nome, successfully finishes the race.
The Chair, you mean start in Wasilla and Anchorage?
No, I mean start in Nome and successfully cross the line and apply for the plates and say, I successfully finished the race. I didn't start back there. It doesn't ask you to do that. And so I only ask that from the point of view of somebody who scam the system might just say, I can verify I successfully finished the race. There's a photograph of me crossing the finish line. So I put that out there for you to deal with.
Through the Chair, to Representative Gatto, that has to be verified through the Iditarod Trail Committee. And I'm doubtful that they would say that you have finished the race if you hadn't started it, but whether that would potentially go to a lawsuit, you make a very good point that...
I thought maybe I could get a plate after all.
Mr. Chair.
Reverend Grunberg.
Yeah, I think to finish a race, you have to start the race. And if you get on two blocks down in Nome, you haven't started the race because the race starts in Wasilla or Anchorage or wherever.
I agree.
I think legally they couldn't do what you're saying.
I think the key is, Mr. Chair, verified by the Iditarod Trail Committee.
Unless so you don't have a Rosie who comes, takes the subway.
Not to Nome. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And on page 2, lines 5 and 6, I'm just one clarification where it says, shall be collected only on the first issuance and on the replacement of the special request plates. Does that mean that if a person has them and then 2 years later they go through their renewal process, that the renewal tags are at the regular rate and have nothing to do with this unless there is a request for physical replacement of plates?
Through the Chair to Vice Chair Seaton, that is my understanding. Whitney Brewster could probably verify that, but that is my understanding.
Okay. With that, Ms. Brewster, I beg your pardon. Vice Chair Seaton.
I had one other question. And that's on page 2, lines 2 and 3. We're charging, under the new plates, $50 for Iditarod race finishers and $30 for other special request plates. And I notice that we have custom vehicle owners are $50. I can see the lower fee for Alaska National Guard veterans, Purple Heart recipients, but I'm trying to figure out why we would have a higher fee for Iditarod race finishers than we would have for other special request plates. I guess that's vanity plates.
Yeah.
And it seems that, can you explain to me the reasoning of why we're not increasing the other special request plates to the same level as the custom vehicle owners, collectors, and Iditarod race finishers?
Through the Chair to Vice Chair Seaton. Like you said, the commonly known as vanity plates would fall under the other special request plates, and I cannot speak for the exact reasoning, but if vanity plates, they already have the same dies, printing. It's much, much simpler for the Department of Motor Vehicles to do that than to design and create a new style of license plate.
Thank you. So this is a new template on the entire plate. It's not just going to say, you know, Iditarod 200 or something like that. It's actually going to be a new style of Alaska plate, or is that for Ms. Whitty?
Through the chair, I don't know that they'll necessarily use a new die or different shape. It may be the exact shape, but there'll be a design for, you know, a new printing process or painting process. It's likely to be a different color, and but that's for the DMV to design and determine.
I'd like to ask you if the DMV is online. Ms. Brewster, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. I've heard several questions directed towards me, and excuse me, you may have to repeat some of them, but most recently, Representative Seaton's question through the chair to address those. The price of specialty request plates are determined by the legislature if the legislature chose a different amount. Of course, that would be acceptable to the DMV, and we would charge those amounts. It's my understanding that the reason why this particular price was selected is because it's comparable to other more collector-type plates versus, as you'll see, the Alaska National Guard, veterans, those type of service-related plates are a little bit cheaper. This is more comparable to a collector's plate.
Any questions on that point?
Thank you. Yes, and my question wasn't to those plates, which I can understand at a different fee. My question was to the broad category of other special request plates. I'm just wanting to find out, I don't have any idea what this design looks like, whether it just says Iditarod on it and then has a number, or Iditarod and a name, or whether it's going to be a wholly different plate requiring a special die. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I would imagine that the DMV would work very closely with the Iditarod Trail Committee to design a plate that would be acceptable. We would create a new design, as we do with all new plates that are created. We do come up with an entirely new plate design, and then we would work with law enforcement to determine that it was visible to officers on the street, and then ultimately it would be approved by the Commissioner of Administration, Commissioner Kreitzer.
Follow up. And thank you, Ms. Brewster. And I guess the question is, do you do that same design work and all for other special request plates?
Through the chair, Representative Keaton, that is correct. We do that for all newly created plates through legislation.
Follow up. I guess what I'm trying to do is find out what other special request plates mean. I mean, does that mean that they're all set up so it can be Tiffany or George II or something like that, which is on a regular plate that doesn't require a special design, or is the same kind of work and all go into the design of this Iditarod race finishers plate, and that same design has to go into the category F, would now be F under the bill, that's page 2, line 3, other special request plates?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, are you asking if there's an existing template that the DMV would use for this plate that are similar to other specialty plates?
Representative Seaton?
No, I'm asking whether, I understand that on this Iditarod race finisher, there'll be a separate design plate. There's a difference of $20 per request for someone getting this Iditarod race finishers plate from the category which will be F now, which is only $30 for other special request plates. And I'm trying to figure out if there's a difference in the design work and on category F, which is only $30 for other special request plates.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, thank you for being patient with me. No, there is not a difference in what is required between Iditarod race finisher plates and Section F. the same amount of work, the DMV goes through the same steps, utilizes the same conditions as in both of those situations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Reverend Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brewster, through the chair, how do you do the design? Do you ever have you ever had a contest among the children or in the state or anything to design a plate?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the most recent version of the Alaska Children's Trust plate, the Alaska Children's Trust actually had a contest, an online contest. They had several designs that they had presented to the public where people could vote, and that is the design, the one that was garnered the most votes, were passed along to the DMV, and that was the design that was utilized. As far as someone from the public actually designing the plate, I'm not aware of a situation of that. We did, with the most recent plate, the 50th anniversary plate, I believe that the Statehood Commission looked at a number of artists' templates and chose Mr. Dean Potter as the winner of the plate design. But other than those two examples, I don't know of any other.
A follow-up?
Reverend Grunberg.
About how long does a contest like that take from start to finish to set it up and before it's ready to go? Before the design is actually selected.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, it would take us approximately 3 months from the time that we send the template along to the vendor for production. I would like to see a sufficient time to advertise the competition and take in those entries and really do a good job of reviewing them. If that was the intent of the legislature for the DMV to review them versus the Iditarod Trail Committee.
Okay, I'm just curious because it's obviously too long to do it in this case, but you're talking about a period of probably anywhere from 6 to 9 months.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think that would be a good estimate.
Okay. Next question.
Representative Grunberg.
We don't yet have a fiscal note from you, but I assume at some point in the process you'll be having a fiscal note on this.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, no, the DMV will not. What occurs is it's a very minimal amount for the DMV to establish a new plate template with our vendor. It's about $250 for a new plate, and so the DMV is not going to put that amount in a fiscal note, obviously. What is important to point out is that the cost of the plate to the applicant would be $50 under this bill. And then what would occur is the cost of the what would occur is that the cost to the state, which is about $10 to produce the plate, those would go back to the DMV. The remaining fees collected would go into the general fund. So under this scenario, $40 would be going back to the general fund. The DMV would retain that $10.
Let me follow up.
Follow up, Representative Grunberg.
The question I asked initially to staff was on page 1, lines 8 to 10. Do you happen to have the bill in front of you, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
What does that sentence, "the department may disapprove, et cetera," mean?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, what I believe this to mean, and I am more than happy to follow up on this, is that if there is an existing plate on the vehicle, this would not be treated as a duplicate plate. This would be a new plate, and it would be the applicant would be required to pay the $50 fee.
Would they turn in the old plate or just keep the old plate like we do with the legislative plates?
They, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, we request that they turn in the plate.
I see. Okay. And my final question is a follow-up.
Representative Gruenberg.
Suppose the person lived in Montana or some other place, and their cars were Montana cars. They could not use this in Montana, could they? It's for Alaska cars, am I right?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that is correct. Mr. Ellis was also correct in saying that each state decides their registration process. I have the assumption that if an individual came up here and registered their vehicle and then brought it back down to Montana, that someone would, it's my hope that law enforcement would identify that individual as having not registered in the amount of time required in that state.
And this is, I guess, it leads to another question.
Final question.
Yeah. we had the figure, and I don't know whether to ask you this or this to you or Mr. Ellis. The figure that he gave was 600 finishers. How many of those are Alaskans? Because the universe we're talking about isn't everybody who's finished, but the Alaskans who finished. Do you know how many you're looking for? And I would ask you, Ms. Brewster, and if you don't know, or Mr. Ellis, whoever knows, but I'm interested in knowing how many people we're going to have who previously finished who are eligible to buy the plates.
Mr. Brewster, would you like to try that?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'm sorry, I do not have that information.
Mr. Ellis?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I do not know the ratio of that.
Okay, thank you.
You're fine. Did you want to do your question first before Representative Satan and then Representative Gatto?
Thank you. I guess I'm still a little bit torn and trying to figure out whether we should change the $30 to $50 on the other specialty plates. I'm not sure why we would be having other vanity plates at less than the custom collectors or the Iditarod race finishers plate. Do you have any thoughts on that, Ms. Brewster?
Through the chair, Representative Stephen, again, just to consider that the cost to the state of producing the plates is $10 per set. Anything above and beyond that goes back into the general fund. I really do not have a strong opinion on that issue, other than, you know, if you look at again other custom plates, they are more in the category of $50. If it was the legislature's decision to go $50 or $30, the DMV would have no problem complying.
Representative Jean, I believe we're trying to expedite this through so that it can be, perhaps, if we're fortunate, be presented at the end of the Iditarod. We have another, at least one more license plate bill coming through, which would be my own, and I think a couple more after that, maybe. Maybe we could address it on those so as not to delay this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm not intending to try and delay this bill at all.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to gather the information because it seems a disparity there, and I have no problem, Mr. Chairman, following your request and not introducing an amendment on this at this time.
Yeah.
And following
I know we're going to have at least one more license plate bill. We can have two more, I think. The firefighters are talking about a plate, so maybe we can explore that on those other plates. So as not to delay this one. Okay, Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Ms. Brewster, just a question. Let's say we have a doctor who has a special license plate that he bought his vanity plate, and it says doctor. He gets in an accident and mangles the plate. He says, I think I'll get a new one. Is that an additional $30 charge?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, no, that would be a $5 replacement.
Okay, that's it then. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to recognize that Representative Newman has joined us. He's been invited to the table, but he'd rather remain out there and throw things. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question on that because as I read page 2, lines 5 and 6, it says that the shall be collected only on the first issuance and on the replacement of special request plates. So it seems to me that this bill says that if you are going to get new plates, replacement of a plate, that the $30 charge would be there for a doctor plate. Ms. Brewster, maybe you can address that, because my understanding between that and page 1, line 9 and 10, where registration plates under this section, that it's on the initial issuance, I guess that's where we were talking about, that it wouldn't be that when you re-registered your tags or you got new updated tags on the same plates, but are you saying that if that your reading of this is that if there is a replacement and asking for new plates under the specialty plates, you'd only charge $5?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, what I understand lines 5 and 6 to mean on page 2 is that the DMV, for instance, with the Iditarod race finisher plate, we would charge the $50 on the first issuance. We would not continue to charge that amount when someone comes in to update their registration. But if they were to come in and choose another special request plate, that would be an additional cost by replacement of special request plates. Representative Gatto was speaking as if the plate was destroyed and they were just simply getting a new plate to replace the one that was mangled. I understand 5 and 6 to mean someone coming in and getting an entirely new design of a plate.
Did that satisfy your question?
Yeah, I mean, it's different than I read it, but if that's the way the DMV is reading
it.
When we, Ms. Brewster, Mr. Chair, when we take up these other bills, I would like the department to look at maybe coming up with some new language that clarifies this very confusing language here, both on lines 8 to 10. I mean, that kind of language, I assume that's elsewhere. At some point, I don't want to delay the bill, and on lines 5 and 6 of the second page, which obviously, at least that last one, will come up when we deal with these other plates, I presume. But I think, as a lawyer, that both of those languages are quite confusing, and that's not the way. I wouldn't have known how to read them, frankly.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we would be happy to look at that language. I agree that it is not not as clear as it needs to be.
I don't want to delay this bill. I'm looking at Representative Newman here, but particularly the language which is unique to this bill on lines 8 to 10 of page 1. I commend to him and his staff that they might have Ledge Legal try to draft that a little clearer, more clearly. It's going to go to some other committees and stuff here. But, you know, I had to ask what it meant, and I think other members of the committee may have been similarly confused, and I can see the need to get this thing through, but maybe they can take a look at this stuff, because both those phrases, I think, are not models of clarity.
It has to be clear enough for the committee members to understand, like me. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And we were talking about the number of plates. Is there... let's say that somebody gets their verification that they're an Iditarod finisher and they have 10 vehicles. They can request 10 sets of plates, but each set of plates registration for the new issuance would be $50. Is that correct for each set of plates?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton. That is correct. They would need, in addition to their biennial registration, they would be charged $50 for each vehicle for each plate set.
Okay, and I appreciate that because you know I presume that you know that many of these plates would be like legislative plates where they are signed by the finisher and auctioned off. Those kind of things couldn't be used. They may not have tags on them, but they become a collectible and something that is used in many kind of charity events around. So anyway, I just wanted to be clear that, that each set of plates would be the $50. So thank you.
I didn't know we did that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I come to these committee meetings. Any other questions for Ms. Brewster? Is there anybody else online who would like to talk? Anybody in the audience who would like to address this bill? Representing Newman, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mark Newman, District 15, and members of the committee. I appreciate you taking action on this today to try and expedite this a little bit. We have the Iditarod coming up, starting here next weekend, and trying to bring a little bit more of attention to the Iditarod. With the lack of sponsorship that's hit not only this sport, but many sports, every sport is feeling this. Doing what we can to try and elevate it a little bit more in stature. I have contacted the governor's office to talk to them about going to know them when the finishers are coming in and signing this, and to bring a little bit more spotlight on the Iditarod. But I appreciate your expediting this. And I know there are others, some other bills. The one with the firemen, volunteer firemen. You know, I think it's got some good merit stuff too. But we'll be working on them too again. And I worked on that one for a couple of years. But this one, I really appreciate the chair working on that to expedite this. And kind of a special instance, but. Lots of good questions. Good questions by Representative Seaton. Yeah, these can become a collector's type plate for charities. Can be donated out, but if they want to pay the $50 fee, then they can pay the $50 fee. And as far as my understanding, whenever through the chair, Representative Gatto, when I've destroyed a license plate, it's a $5 where you go back there and to get another plate. So I don't know if it's different for collector plates or not. Generally, that's what it's been for me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Goddard. Do you have a question?
I do. For Ms. Brewster again. Ms. Brewster, is there any limit to who can request special plates? I mean, can we have plates from the Ornithological Society, from the Numismatic Society, or do we have any restriction, even if a society of a single person?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, if the legislature chose to create a new plate for all sorts of groups, that is the right of the legislature. There is no restriction on how many plates the legislature wants to create. However, I can tell you that it is very difficult for law enforcement to be able to identify which plates are legitimate and which ones are not. So I would just offer that caution it's selective in the plate that it chooses to created.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that point, I know that both with the fire department plate and this plate too, that they have worked with DMV and people who design plates, because she's right, they don't have the clarity in the plate and different backgrounds and lines on the plate. It's all kind of critical of a state trooper, public safety officers, to be able to identify them. Clarity, and so that's why the different colors that are on the plate have been looked at, and they work with the department on this to try and make sure that this is what meets the backgrounds and colors and things like that.
Representative Seaton?
I guess following that question, I was curious of then what other special plates are if we haven't designated the Ornithological Society as a special plate. I mean, does that mean that someone can just request another special plate, even though, because we have a category for other special plates? This is to Ms. Brewster.
Ms. Brewster?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the DMV would not simply create a plate unless the legislature allowed for that.
And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
And I guess maybe you can get back to us on this, you know, just in writing about what are other special request plates and how those are set up in law if they're not set up here other than as a broad category. And that doesn't influence this bill, but it's a question that will come up. And so I appreciate the indulgence of asking that question. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other testimony? Without outlawed public testimony, Ms. Brewster, if you get a chance, could you maybe call my office later on another bill we're working on?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Apparently, we didn't open public testimony. Open public testimony. Any other testimony? Public testimony is closed. Best public testimony we ever had. Okay, discussion around the table. Representative Vice Chair Seaton.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 116, 26 LS0519 /A from committee with individual recommendations and pass fiscal note, zero fiscal note.
Okay, without objection, this bill passed. Congratulations. Representative Newman. Our next bill is, he may have left the room already here. Do we have Representative SJR 5? Let's take a short at ease while we we're going to now consider Senate Joint Resolution number 5 and welcome to our committee. Would you please introduce the bill for us?
Thank you.
Or resolution, I should say.
Good morning. My name is Karen Sawyer, and I'm staff to Senator Charlie Huggins. And SJR 5 is related to just asking the Department of Defense to continue the retirement funds for the Alaska Territorial Guard. Many of you probably know that recently in January, the Army decided that due to a legal glitch, that they were no longer eligible for retirement funds. And that decision did bring up quite a bit of fury among the country, and our congressional delegates introduced two bills right away, which are sitting in Congress right now. But in the meantime, they did come up with some funding from emergency funds that the Army had that would cover 60 days only. And so this resolution is asking them to make this a permanent, you know, retirement fund for the ATG members, but also to thank the congressional delegation for introducing the legislation, and most importantly, to urge the Department of Defense to continue to use their emergency funds until such a decision is made, either by passing one of the congressional bills or the decision made in January is reversed. Our understanding is that the bills are put into the Defense Act, which typically is not heard until like maybe August of this year, which means they're going to go well past the 60 days. I just talked with somebody from Begich's office yesterday, and he said that the same thing is going to happen, where they probably will not hear this for quite some time. So, and they will not be using money, any further funds to continue the retirement pay. So we're hoping that this resolution will continue to provide an urging to Congress or the Department of Defense.
So as I understand it then, Territorial Guard retirees are not safe. When it expires,
no. Right now,
it's right back to square one.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. There's 26 members that were currently receiving retirement pay, and those were the members that their pay was cut. There's an additional approximately 30 members that are in the works, I understand, that could possibly be affected by this down the line once their paperwork is completed. And we're talking about members who are in their 80s, living in rural area. I mean, this couldn't have happened at a worse time when the resources are scarce, they have very little money, and they depend on this retirement pay. And I, you know, it's just a horrible thing to happen to somebody who's defended our country. So
May I ask, how much money are we talking about?
About $10,000.
How much?
$10,000 a month.
$10,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. and they're in their 80s, so we know that this isn't going to, you know, be a long-term thing.
Is there any possibility of the state helping out here if required?
Well, actually,
last resort.
Yes, actually, Senator Huggins has introduced a bill that the state will pick that up, and we've already got that as a set aside some funding for that. We have not been moving that bill until we know whether the Department of Defense is going to pick up the tab for the remaining days after 60 days. But we probably will start moving it this month.
I would think that'd be a good thing because with our lawyer's 90-day session, having to get it through both houses.
Right. That was one of the...
We don't want this session to end here until this is resolved one way or another, I would think.
Mr. Chair, that is exactly what Senator Huggins wants to do, and so that's, as soon as he gets back from the Energy Council, we'll probably be moving that forward. And I'm sure that will probably move pretty fast, too.
Thank you. Any questions for the sponsor?
I do.
Okay. Territorial Guard license plate? Representative Grunberg.
It's early in the morning, too early for a response to that one.
Good idea, though.
Yeah. I would appreciate knowing Ms. Sawyer. It doesn't specifically say here that we request Congress to take up those bills as quickly as possible.
Well, we thank them through the chair, Representative Grunberg.
Would you give us the location?
Well, I'm looking at the resolves on page 2. We thank them for introducing the bill. Mm-hmm. And we request the Department of Defense to continue emergency interim funding. But we don't ask, and I'm going two places with this, Ms. Sawyer, through the chair. Number one, that we'd ask the Congress and the relevant committees to take up and pass these bills as quickly as possible. And I would also suggest that without delaying the bill, we ask them to hold some hearings in Alaska on it, so they can really see the impact of this.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I will certainly give that information to Senator Huggins. I know that in talking with Senator Murkowski's office and Senator Begich's office, they are trying to find vehicles that they can insert their bills into.
Write them.
And that is something that they are very much on top of this issue. So they are continually looking for some kind of bill that they can put it into instead of putting it into the Defense Act. But that is typically what happens with any type of funding requests. And because it's tied up with funds for military. And perhaps... McHugh Pierre is here from DMV. Maybe he can, I don't know if he can answer any more
of
that, how that works with the Defense Act.
As a point in passing, I would just think that trying to request hearings in Alaska would just delay things further. Please introduce yourself.
For the record, Mr. Chair, my name is McHugh Pierre, Legislative Liaison for Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And to address the issue of funding through the congressional action, General Campbell was back in Washington, D.C. last week, and he did meet with Secretary of the Army Pete Garin. He thanked him for offering the support to the Territorial Guard members, and Secretary Garin did respond and say, I'm not going to be around for very much longer, so we really need to get this passed. The law needs to get changed. So there's a lot of pressure right now from DOD to the Senate, particularly because we have our two senators pushing this, and through other meetings that General Campbell had last week, the Senate offices both said that they believe this language will be inserted in the Defense Appropriations Bill, which will be passed this fall. And they are 95% guaranteed that that language will be inserted there, and it will be, the law will be changed to make sure that these Territorial Guard members continue to get funded. However, I would offer a piece of caution to the committee that this is a federal issue. This is federal retirement for military members that were honored for their service. Now, is this a state issue. Certainly, there's always that creep of when the federal government doesn't hold up to its end of the bargain, how do we make sure and hold them accountable? And I believe that this resolution is certainly the one good step in the right direction.
Well, if they were to pass this in the fall, military appropriations bill, these folks are going to run out of money long before then, and so we need to be able to take care of them until the Congress does something. And you said this is in the works?
Well, in the resolution, we're urging the department through the chair. We're urging the Department of Defense to actually continue paying out of their emergency funds. So if there is enough action towards, you know, like letters or, you know, the resolutions, perhaps they will continue it, because they did act immediately upon the actions of our congressional delegation. Senator Murkowski particularly.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Do either of you know what was the legal basis for the new DOD decision? Were they reinterpreting an authorizing statute? Mr. Pierre, do you know?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's correct. The Department of Army Personnel, Division of Personnel, lawyer, Lieutenant Colonel, in fact, was reading the regulation again due to the political climate. And obviously there were some grumblings that this should not have been allowed in the first place. This lawyer, Lieutenant Colonel, looked at this language and said, you know what, it specifically does not say that the Territorial Guard members will receive time for their or money for their time served. So they would be eligible for all of the medical benefits through the VA if they served a full career. For instance, you know, the Territorial Guard members served 4 or 5 years, some off and on, some as short as two, during World War II. Many of them went on to continue a career in the military. After 16 or 17 years, some of them finished their service and went on to a private civilian life. With the time added to that total, the 5 years from the Territorial Guard, the 16 or 17 years, it bumped them up to the 20-year plus retirement minimum, so they would receive all their full benefits. This attorney did take it upon himself to reread the law and signal a change, and that change was taken on.
I would think then that if this would count toward a full military retirement, would count in these 3-4 years or whatever it is, that wouldn't be valid then for a full military retirement, because you wouldn't have your 20 years. If there's 3-4 years were not valid, they'd be knocked out of even much larger retirement, correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you know, that does make sense and that does seem correct. However, when Senator Stevens pushed this law through Congress in about 2002, there were some specific things in there, excuse me, that prohibited the full range of retirement to be taken in effect. And that's what this Lieutenant Colonel lawyer found to be true.
This Lieutenant Colonel, are you part of our military or some other countries?
No.
Representative Grunberg.
No, I'll yield. I want to think on my question before I ask.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. Mr. Pierre, I can see how in 1942 we're at war, and we have a territorial governor who formed the Territorial Guard. But was he acting on behalf of the U.S. military, or was he acting as the territorial governor?
Do we even know? Through the chair, Representative Gatto, this was not formed by the territorial governor. This was formed by the United States Army under the command of Major McTuck Marston. And Major Marston formed these, militias, the Territorial Guard, in each community to augment the presence of the Army in Alaska, because he understood that you could not have adequate coverage across such a vast land without having locals involved in the process.
I ask that because of the first whereas, which clearly says the Alaska Territorial Guard was formed by Territorial Governor Ernest Greening. That statement is a statement that stands by itself.
through the chair, Representative Gatto, yeah, I apologize. That traditionally and legally, yes, that is true. However, through direction of Major McTuck Marston, the United States Army, is how they operated, were outfitted, and learned their orders, their commands, their marches, formations, okay, all of the above.
And if I continue, I would put under authority of U.S. Army McTuck Marston or something as an adder to the first whereas, just to make it clear that this was not, hey, I'm the governor in the territory, I think I'll form a territorial guard.
In through the chair, Representative Gatto, in your packet, there's a under Wikipedia, actually, for Alaska Territorial Guard, it says that in 1941, Major Marston was commissioned by the Pentagon as a major with orders to Alaska, and they were anticipating that the Alaska National Guard was going to be called away to because of the war, and so that's when Major Marston was commissioned to set up this Alaska Territorial Guard to defend against the Japanese because of the attack that had already happened in Alaska.
So we have to be careful with Wikipedia because that's really not a that's a volunteer.
Well, that just
love kind Wikipedia,
right?
But there's all kinds of stuff on there.
But yeah, it just gives some timeline there.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Grunberg,
I must confess that we did not look through the backup here to determine whether the legal issues are set forth. Ms. Sawyer, to the chair, are the legal issues or the language of the federal law, is that in here in the packet somewhere?
By we, you mean you and your staff?
Yeah.
Or the whole committee?
No, me.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, actually we did not, nobody got the copies of the legal interpretation that was made by
legal
this
opinion.
Lieutenant Colonel. In fact, even our congressional delegates were not able to get it. And I'm not
what?
Sure if anybody has seen it yet to this day.
No, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we have not received the interpretation of the opinion of this lawyer. However, what we did receive was some cooperation from the Division of Personnel, Department of Army, to offer language to change the existing statute, which would allow the existing code, which would allow continued funding at appropriate retirement expectations for these military members. That was not given to Department of Military and Veterans Affairs or anyone in the state of Alaska. It was given directly to Senator Lisa Murkowski and Senator Begich's offices in D.C.
Through the chair,
Representative Grunberg.
Did they ever request a copy of that opinion? And that request was not honored?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that is correct.
That, to me, folks, is as important as anything else, that a U.S. senator and a U.S. congressman can't get a copy of the underlying opinion. What is their claim of not providing that documentation?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I can't speak to the activities of our congressional delegation. However, what I can speak to is the outrage that you're showing right now, and we share that outrage because really this identifies 26 elderly people in Alaska that are really in the twilight of their life, and we share a similar outrage. It's directed differently, and we urge your support of this resolution.
Mr. Chair, I am outraged. We have a member of the Armed Services Committee, a member of the Veterans Affairs Committee, a member of the Appropriations Committee, and upon their request, those agencies don't immediately provide the underlying legal opinion. That's atrocious, and I would hope, Ms. Sawyer, I feel like adding something to this bill that says that they should change the law or do whatever is necessary so in the future congressional requests are honored. And we have more than a passing interest in this legislature in making sure that similar requests from this legislature to the executive branch are honored in the future. That's serious stuff.
I totally agree with you, but I would hate, I think, to put it into this resolution.
Regardless.
But maybe another resolution might be in order.
To me, that if this is an example of how the Department of Defense can ignore and refuse a request of our delegation and their members of that committee. That's serious stuff that reaches to national security levels. I am astounded and dismayed to hear that, and I don't often say those terms.
That's true.
I mean, that is, and I'd need to just emphasize this for the record. You're absolutely sure they requested, and you're absolutely sure that that was refused.
To the chair, Representative Grunberg, that is what we were told.
Okay.
They requested several times and did not. There was a delay, apparently, of trying to get the information to them.
Well, did it eventually come to them?
You say it was refused, or they just didn't respond?
Or was it just a delay?
I don't know what the exact term, terminology was that was used to their offices, just that they were not able to get the legal interpretation.
Through the chair. Have they got it yet?
Not to my knowledge, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate it if you could check that and let this committee know, because if they are having that kind of trouble, that is something I think this committee and this legislature needs to know, and the American people need to know.
And we need to know if this was a refusal or was it a case of being totally non-responsive. There is a difference.
And Mr. Chair, I would say that alone is the need for an immediate hearing and a subpoena.
That'll get it.
We could try to avoid subpoenas.
Not
in this
case.
Just a little bit here.
I'd issue a subpoena.
Through the chair, one of the things that we did find out from the staff person that we're working with through Senator Murkowski's office is that the attorney that made this interpretation even got a bonus.
Really?
So, that's irrelevant.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seaton.
You know, I understand, we're concerned about this, but insinuating ourselves into the privilege of an executive department and internal communications and internal legal opinions not being shared with the legislative branch, and the U.S. Government is, I think, beyond the scope of our resolution here. I think that our resolution here is saying that we want the interpretation of the United States law to be such that these well-deserving territorial guardsmen should have retirement. And I would hate to see us get sidetracked or sidetrack this in any way in which could be a confrontation between the executive and the legislative branch of the U.S. Congress and then develop some kind of animosity between, from the executive branch, the Department of Defense. I think my understanding is there's been great communication between General Campbell and the Department of Defense, which is the executive branch, whether they are internally sharing their internal legal memorandums with the legislative branch is maybe a topic of concern or debate, but I would hate to in any way put that somehow into this resolution and potentially draw a conflict between the branches of the United States government into this sole issue. So, we have been told in the past that our resolutions are important. The exact wording of our resolutions aren't quite as important as the intent and the spirit of those, but the timeliness is important. So, I would hope we don't get too off track on this resolution.
I do not want to see anything added to this resolution as it stands, because I don't want to muddy the water. The purpose, of course, is to help the Territorial Guard people. The other is a kind of a separate issue, and so I don't want to say anything added. On the other hand, I would like to get this information back to the committee,
yes.
Representative Grunberg, indicated, as I indicated, was this a refusal or was it just a total non-response? And get it back to our committee, and then we can discuss that either among our staffs or so on. And then if something needs to be done in the future, maybe we can address it. But we get the information and then decide what to do with it. But keep that separate from this, because we don't do anything to further complicate these folks getting their thing. And we might put in, might add to the resolution, this Lieutenant Colonel be assigned to Afghanistan or perhaps to Greenland.
ADAC.
All right, there you
Mr.
go.
Mr. Chair.
And let's bring this to rapid close. Representative Grunberg.
That was exactly what I was hoping we would do, Mr. Chair. I don't want to muddy the waters on this resolution, and I don't want to just go on a rumor here, but the underlying issue that I see legally and in the broader sense is if somebody is denied their benefits, they have a right to know the basis for that denial. And when a congressman, a senator, asks for that information, that should not be privileged as work product in the attorney sense, because it's the basis for a decision denying benefits. And it's not an internal, it's no longer an internal memo. If the memo itself's internal, then they need to reformulate that in a written opinion. And there must have been a written opinion. They don't just deny benefits without a written opinion. I've never seen that. And I think that would be illegal. I think there has to be a legal basis setting forth the findings and the conclusions and the legal basis for that. So there's got to be something there.
Do we know if there is a written opinion? And if you can get access to it, we'd like to see it, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Mr. Chair, I will definitely give both of the offices a call, all three offices a call, just to get that information and see if they actually did get a refusal or if it was a delay, what the exact wording was, and then also if there's any information on when the legal opinion might be available.
Right. Thank you very much.
I'll get that back.
Okay. And the reason I was saying that, Mr. Chair, was because if this is based on a 2000 law that Senator Stevens passed, which I vaguely recall, that certainly was not his intent and couldn't conceivably have been the congressional intent. And, you know, if that's the case, and this is looking at the words rather than the overall picture of the law and the legislative intent, I wonder whether that was correct and may have just been an erroneous decision. That's where I'm coming from.
Okay. Reverend Agato, and then let's make this the last question, if we may.
It's a simple question, Mr. Chair.
There's no such thing as a simple question.
This one is, they receive no pay. Is that conceivably the reason that their retirement benefit is the retirement benefit based on pay?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I honestly don't know the answer.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to thank you very much. Good testimony.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to go to public testimony now. Is anybody online on this bill? Okay, is anybody in the room, in the audience here, like testifying this bill? If not, I'm going to close public testimony and go to committee discussion and debate. Vice Chair Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 5, 26 LS0468 / E from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note, zero fiscal note.
Okay. Without objection, this bill has passed the House State Affairs Committee, and I don't want to upset anybody, but there will be no State Affairs Committee on.
Well, I'm coming anyway. It's too bad for you.
And you may come anyway if you wish. Nancy, do we have what we expect to do a week from today?
Well, it's not been finalized.
Well, could you give us an idea what?
I think.
It's informal.
Yeah. I think HB 136, which is Rammer's of the bill.
Well, that's okay. Just ask me informally. No committee meeting Thursday. If there's nothing else, no further business coming before the committee. Thank you. We are adjourned at 9:20.